chairperson and director of CIRA and the delegation. We're looking forward to today's briefing. Maybe just in terms of our program, I will just give an opportunity for the honourable members to introduce themselves, then of course the CIRA delegation. Then there is just a statement from myself with regard to certain issues that is in the public domain, just to deal with that, and then we'll proceed with the presentation. Let us give an opportunity to the honourable members to introduce themselves. Honourable Molebatsi, we can start with you.
Goeiemôre dames en here. My name is NG Molebatsi. Ek is a lid van hierdie komitee. Baie dankie.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sanbonani, good morning. My name is Zakele Mbele, member of the committee.
Good morning, Maurice Hedling. I'm also a member of the committee. Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Leonard Ramasakane, a member of the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. My name is Cindy Ramasa, a member of the portfolio committee. Thank you.
Ndivhuwa mchimudza mushumo ndine mapechari one member of the NA committee ya chipolisa.
Then the chairperson, Proxima Sibuko, if you can just maybe introduce your delegation.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members of the committee. I will first introduce members of council. On my left, I have Mr. Ntlanhla. Bane is the deputy chair. At the back, is Mr. Oliver, Major General Mr. Citizen, and Mr. Zwile Zulu, the five members who are all here. And then the management team, we've got our director, Mr. Manabela Chonge, and next to him is Mr. Matosi Wakode, the CFO, deputy director, finance administration. Next to him is Mr. Stefan Ballinghoff, the acting deputy director, law enforcement. And next to him is Mr. Nicole, deputy director, communications, SRF, and training. And across over the chair, we have Ms. Balenim Tembu, the senior manager, a parliamentary and stakeholder liaison. Thank you, that is it.
Thank you very much, Professor, for that introduction. Then, honourable members, I just want to address one or two issues in the public domain and also one or two issues that was raised last week in the committee. Now, the Portfolio Committee on Police have taken note of recent incidents in Vuyani, Kulini, El Araro Park, Ennard Island yesterday in Richards Bay, where protest action graduated into violence, damage to infrastructure, residential areas, and the disruption to civil school and business activities. The PC on Police calls on communities to exercise their constitutional right to protest within the confines of the law and not to break the law by becoming involved in criminal activities. The South African Police Service have a constitutional duty to protect and secure the inhabitants of the Republic and their property and to uphold and to enforce the law. The PC on Police wants to call on communities to work with the SAPs to address any criminal acts and not to take the law into their own hands. We cannot allow vigilante groups and armed militia to become the first responders in volatile situations. That is the role of the South African Police Service. The South African Police Service must ensure that the necessary deployments are made and maintained to stabilize the different situations. We welcome the efforts by cluster commanders and station commanders to bring role players together to defuse very volatile situations. The effective use of the crime intelligence program and the deployment of sufficient human resources should be a priority. Then any attacks on members of the South African Police Service must be dealt with as a matter of urgency, and the National Prosecuting Authority must prioritize these matters. Any attack on law enforcement officers cannot be tolerated. The attack, especially yesterday on two officers in Richards Bay by protesters, is again an indication that certain elements in our society do not appreciate the basis foundation of the constitutional state. The PC on Police calls on community leaders and relevant parties not to escalate conflict by inflammatory statements, by lead by example, any incident of racism should immediately be reported to the Human Rights Commission for investigation, and any improper conduct at local government level should be reported to the Office of the Public Protector. We call on our people to utilize the constitutional mechanisms that are available to register their complaints and concerns. Then the second issue, the Portfolio Committee on Police received last week a briefing by the Executive Director of IPED indicating alleged interference by some SAPS members in a high-profile investigation by IPED. Now, this is a matter of grave concern to the committee. IPED is established in terms of Section 2066 of the Constitution and the IPED Act to investigate any alleged offence or misconduct by a member of the service. Any unlawful interference in the investigations of the IPED cannot be allowed. In terms of the oversight role of this committee, it's essential that we are kept abreast of developments in this regard. We also need an assurance from SAPS leadership that there is no deliberate attempt to undermine the mandate of the IPED. We will therefore invite the Acting National Commissioner and the IPED Executive Director next week, Tuesday, to the PC on Police to brief us with regard to this matter. That is the end of the statement. I don't know if there's any comments from members on the statement. Honourable Bele.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's just to echo the sentiments about the concern we all shared when we heard the testimony from Mr. McBride about the allegations of intimidation and counterintelligence, I think as you put it, in interfering in IPED investigation. So just to commend the action step for the committee to look into that by inviting both leaderships.
Honourable Wolobansi.
Thank you, Chairperson. We also agree with the sentiments you raised to say we must have both sides of the story so that we really get to the bottom of it. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. That's all the members. Right, thank you very much. We will then continue with the rest of the program, and we'll then ask Professor Masaluki to start with the presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Chair, I'll just give an oversight of the Council activities and then the operations. The Chair Executive Team, led by the Director, will continue the presentation. The Council was once appointed in January this year. What we have done, we continue with our charging our oversight mandate, but added to that, we as a council, we also do outreach and be part of stakeholder engagement activities so that we understand, we have an understanding of what we are overseeing. We also make sure that the deputy chair, who is also the chair of the Corporate Stakeholder Committee, attends this activity. Have taken place at KZN, Richards Bay to be specific, and Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, and Western Cape. We have finalized the process of appointing the Deputy Director, Law Enforcement. Hopefully, the person will commence duty in June 2017. We have also approved the strategic plan, the annual performance and the budget for the financial year 2017-2018. We also make it our core business to review policies, existing policies, and approve new policies. For the financial year 2017, we reviewed and approved 24 corporate policies of the authority. Last time we were here, we talked about the transformation project. The panel of experts have been appointed, about 14 members. They started doing their work, developing the terms of reference for the consultative process with the the director will elaborate on the logistics of those processes. Of course, we also had a initial council meeting and had over a meeting with the new executive authority, Honorable Minister Fikile Mbalula and his core support team. We did a handover, and the outgoing Honorable Minister Ntlego was there with his senior support staff. So far, that's what the council has been doing, Honorable Members. I will then hand over to the director. Thank you.
Professor? Thank you, Mr. Shoki. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning once again to Honorable Members. Chairperson, we thought also it might be very important to also brief the House on some of the matters that we were already busy with on progress, key service delivery projects. We continue to make sure that we go to smaller areas around the country where we don't have offices to set up temporary kind of service points to service our stakeholders there. On operational efficiencies, we are still running around an average of 15 days in terms of the turnaround to register security officers and businesses. We've also improved on the registration of businesses. We are almost 50% above 39% in terms of processing dockets as well as prosecutions compared to the previous target we had, which was about 80%. In terms of training, Chairperson, we are continuing to build capacity, to do capacity building workshops. These are workshops which are designed to assist members who are coming for the first time within the industry to understand what are the obligations in terms of the code of conduct, how to be running the business, and how to be making sure that they comply in terms of statutory wages that they need to pay to guards and all other things that are required for them to comply within the industry. In terms of law enforcement, Chairperson, we've also in the 2016-2017, which we will be later reporting to at the end of the year, we've increased in terms of the number of active security officers. You will see that we reporting 498,000 as opposed to 488,000 security officers in that year. In terms of training and registration of as a professional body, you would recall, Chairperson, that we announced that we said I would be registering as a professional body for the industry. That registration is going through. We're looking forward to have the first notice gazetted on the 12th of May this year. Then we will also be commencing, we are aligning the old grades training into the new skills programs so that we are able to move forward in terms of the occupational qualifications within the industry. So that is the progress with regard to that. In terms of the bill, Chairperson, our team has attended a meeting within the presidency to try to align, to outline some of the challenges that they have. I think there's a lot of representations that they've received for and in favor of the bill. So we're still awaiting communication from the presidency in terms of the way forward. This process has been led by the Civilian Secretariat of Police, Chairperson. In terms of the building offices, you would recall that we already reported we are going to move the Pretoria office, Chairperson. That process is going ahead. The adjudication process was finalized. We're looking at appointing a service provider to provide us with premises on the first quarter of this year in terms of moving the Pretoria office. The current state of the office is quite very bad, so it's quite urgent for us to move into a proper office where we are able to service our members there. Chairperson, I think that is in a nutshell on those progress matters. I will move on to giving the strategic overview. Chairperson, the strategic overview has really changed. As you know, that we refine the strategy almost every 5 years. The outlook for the next 5 years is almost the same. The KPIs have changed because we look at them differently when we have it also hasn't changed. It's still the same. The summary is on the slide 12, Chairperson. I wouldn't want to go very much into detail with regard to that. We're still saying that we need to promote legitimate industry. We're still saying that we want to regulate in the public and the national interest. We're still saying that we need to determine and enforce minimum occupational conduct, which is quite really important because that talks to what the service providers are doing. We're still saying we want to ensure that all of these are done in a transparent, fair, and objective, and that our registration are timeless, are done timelessly. And we're still saying that we need to be actively monitoring the conduct of service providers, as well as doing investigations in terms of their conduct. We're also going out to promote the rights of the users and how to respect those rights, especially when it comes to service providers. In terms of the goals themselves, Chairperson, the goals are still as they are. The goals in the outlook for the next 5 years, we still want to ensure that there's excellent service delivery, and we want to achieve that through effective regulation in the industry. We still want to pursue the stakeholder and customer relations management area, because we believe that is very key to bring us closer to the industry, so that the industry understand what is the primary objective of the whole regulation process. We still want to ensure that there's good governance across the organization. I think we've done very well with regard to the goal over the past 5 years, Chairperson. In terms of the industry stewardship, Chairperson, that talks to our research and development, that is still a goal that we're very much pursuing as well over the term. The objective, Chairperson, in terms of supporting all these goals over the medium term for a year, we haven't really moved as well in terms of the objectives. They still remain the same. We want to ensure that it's effective financial management. We want to ensure that we have effective and efficient processes and systems within the organization. We want to improve performance of the organization. We also want to see increased monitoring. So each and every year, we want to move the target up and up and up, depending on the capacity that we have. We also want to see increased awareness of the functions of the regulator within the industry, as well as stakeholders. We want to ensure that there is integrity within our registration processes, because that is very key in protecting society in South Africa. If we do not have integrity, we're registering wrong people who shouldn't be in the industry, that place a very much big risk on our society. And also including that the turnaround time also is quite very efficient. So we also want to ensure that compliance with minimum professional training standard is enhanced, and I think in the nearer future we'll be talking some more about what is it that we're doing. The registration of CIRA as a professional body is a step moving forward to achieving those standards. The conduct, Chairperson, we continue to conduct research and development so that we're able to guide policy direction in terms of regulation. So that remains our key objectives, and I think we, from every year improving in terms of those areas of research. So far we've about six or so areas that we've researched, and we're continuing to do so. In Chairperson, in terms of the outcomes, we still have three programs. We've retained the three programs as they are in this year, which is the administration, law enforcement, communications and training, looking after all the business units that we have. I wouldn't say, I think it's quite very clear what the responsibilities are. My colleagues will speak to that as well. The outcomes, Chairperson, also remain the same. We have eight outcomes out of the three programs that we have. I wouldn't want to repeat the outcomes, Chairperson, because they talk to the strategic objectives that I've just read to the committee in terms of dealing with the outcomes. Chairperson, from now, I will just then give an opportunity to my colleagues to talk to specific programs, beginning with program one, which will be dealt with by our CFO, Ms. Mkhodi. Thank you.
Thank you. Program one, the purpose of program one is to provide leadership, strategic management, administrative support to the whole organization. And then the program is divided into three. We have finance and administration, we have business information technology, we have human capital. And then the next slide is in terms of our APP, we want to achieve, maintain the unqualified audit opinion with the reduced audit binding. In 2017-18, we want to reduce the significant finding, and then also on, in 2018-19, we want to reduce them to nil, and then in 2019-20, we want to achieve clean audit, meaning that both our performance information and financial information will be credible and free from material misstatements. And then the next one is percentage of revenue collected. We put it there because we are a self-funded organization and we should ensure that our debt collection strategies are tight. So in 2017-18, we're aiming to collect 80% of the bills. And then in the next financial year, 18-19, we want to achieve collect 85%, and in the next financial year, we want to achieve collect 90% of the billed revenue to ensure that we fund our operational needs. And then the next slide, this is the slide where we indicate per year what are we going to do. And then under unqualified audit, we say in the quarter one, we will review our compliance strategies and then ensure that our corporate governance is compliant. And then in quarter two, we'll have the unqualified, it's where the AG delivers the unqualified audit, and then we'll aim to have the 20% reduction. And then we'll develop immediately after the AG has pronounced on the on unqualified audit opinion, the matters that are raised, will develop an action plan and implement also the internal control, internal audit strategy and action plan like we did in the last financial year. And then in quarter four, we'll always review the way we do it here. We come and give you a status to date and monitor ourselves on progress that we have implemented over the year. And then also, this is in terms of percentage revenue collected, we're saying in quarter one is our peak, it's where we're going to collect, and then 40%, 55%, 65%, until 80%. And then the next KPI is critical IT restore. We solely depend on systems, so if we have downtime in terms of system, we're going to be affected negatively. So that's why we put it as a KPI, so that we ensure that our stakeholders are able to interact and transact with us as and when they want to. So currently we are at 36 hours. I think we are doing very well. We are from 120 hours. And then the next one, it's a yearly one. We develop an action plan, and then we average ourselves over the year. And then this is also support the business continuity plan in terms of the IT controls. The next one is the percentage of implementation of performance management system. We put it here because it's in order for us to achieve what we want in terms of our strategy plan and APP. We should inculcate performance management that is aligned to our strategic plan and APP. So we say all officials of CIRA should have performance contract and be implemented on yearly basis and monitored on quarterly basis. So we review our performance on quarterly basis, and then also implement the development plans and training to empower our official to be able to deliver in terms of our goals. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm representing the program two, which is the law enforcement department. Obviously, our purpose is to ensure effective compliance by the private security industry. We have three sub-programs within the law enforcement department. It includes the enforcement department, which is more the investigation unit. Then we have the compliance department, which is more dealing with inspections, and then legal services and prosecution. Now, my apologies, Jay, I seem like I'm just lost. Our first key performance indicator deal with the inspections, both business inspections, and then the second key performance indicator deal with security officer inspections. In terms of our law enforcement strategy, we focus on all categories of security service providers, but not just the businesses in itself. We also inspect security officers to verify compliance at the different sites. And then our targets are set out over our 3 years. First of all, 5,500 business inspections, then increase over the next 2 years. And the security officer inspections are 31,000 target for the current financial year, 17-18, and then obviously the increase over the next 3 years. The percentage of investigations finalized, our target is 83%, and this is the investigations and the complaints we receive for non-compliance of our legislation, which is then investigated by our enforcement department. We are building capacity within that department as well, and we are increasing the inspectors within that particular department. Our next key performance indicator deal with the criminal cases opened against non-compliant security service providers. This year's target was 80%. We achieved 91%, and we set our target for 93% in this financial year. And I must mention there, Chairperson, that we've been receiving very good cooperation with the African Police Service in that regard. So that's why we actually increased our target significantly there. Our working relationship has significantly improved over the last few years. We also set a key performance indicator for inspection of businesses that are licensed for firearms to verify compliance in terms of our legislation, in terms of the issuing of firearms, as well as the Firearms Control Act. And our target is set out for 1,200 inspections at these businesses. This information is then also shared with the South African Police Service through our national consultative forum, as well as the registrar of firearms. We also have a key performance indicator for the percentage of complaints of security service providers prosecuted. Those are the inspections and investigations conducted by the inspectors, and if non-compliance is found and code of conduct charges are compiled, it must be prosecuted by our legal services. Our target is 90%. In that regard, we also increase our target significantly. We've, following from the amendment of our regulations where we combine the summons and charge sheet procedure, we've actually in a position to up our target there because the turnaround time for our prosecution has been increased significantly. And then we also developed a new indicator in terms of developing draft regulations. Following from the work done by our research department, the aim of this key performance indicator is to develop regulations then for the consideration by the minister and in publication in terms of the Private Security Industry Regulation Act. Our target is to, and our focus area particularly with the regulations that we are looking at now, is the issue of uniform badges and then also working animals in the private security industry. The next slide deals with the breakdown of those key performance indicator targets then within the quarters for this financial year. If you look at the inspection targets, it's set out the first quarter and second quarter, and then a little bit of a reduction in the third and fourth quarter, and that is simply because of the December-January period as well. And then it sets out, obviously, the investigation target, which is progressively increasing, because we also include our cases carried over from the previous financial year to the current financial year, and then, obviously, the new complaints that we receive, and our ultimate target for quarter four is then 83%. In terms of the criminal prosecutions, 93% is the annual target, and we're maintaining that throughout all the quarters. The number of security business licensed possessed firearms inspected, the target is 1,200, and then the first two quarters is 330, and then progressively a little bit lower in the third and fourth quarter in view of the December-January period. The percentage of cases of non-compliance prosecuted,
Our annual target, as I mentioned, 90%, and then it increases from the first quarter 60%, because we also include the cases carried over from the previous financial year, and then progressively to meet our annual target of 90%. And then the draft regulations is that we've already done the proposals in terms of approval, and then we will work then on the regulations and submit the regulation for the Minister for consideration and approval and promulgation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be presenting on Program 3, which focuses on stakeholder relations, industry training, registration, and research in order to enable us to strengthen our core business initiatives. As we have clearly outlined, the four sub-programs is communication and stakeholder management, industry registration, industry training, and research. The next slide sort of gives an overview of our awareness initiatives. We aim to, we have outlined this as one of our strategic priorities, and I need to highlight the fact that you might even see just one target. However, we have a clearly defined segmented strategy as far as our awareness is concerned to make sure that we address the various stakeholders that exist within the private security industry. Over and above, we educate the public about what the private security industry is all about. One of the key deliverables that we have been initiated is to promote the private security as a career of choice to learners, so that they can take it as a professional career path and explore the opportunities that exist within the private security. Another thing was to make sure that the public understand the private security industry is not just about the guarding sector. There are various disciplines that exist within the private security industry. Hence, it's so important that we intensify our awareness and segment our strategy accordingly. And you will see in the next slides that we have literally indicated in terms of how are we going to make sure that the set strategic approach is achieved throughout the financial year as we travel through the different provinces across the country to engage with our various stakeholders across the different disciplines. The next slide talks about the whole issue of how to improve our registration processes. As the director mentioned earlier, that as we legitimize the various stakeholders that want to enter this private security industry, it's important that our system are efficient. And in the future, in the near future, we'll be introducing an online system that will see our turnaround system being heavily improved from the current 15-day turnaround time to almost a day if all goes according to plan. We will be beefing our turnaround time system and processes with an online system that will make it easy for everyone to register it anyway without having to have to stand on a queue to access that process. So currently we've just said, in as far as the 2017 is concerned, we've set a 15-day turnaround time, but you will see in the next financial year we'll be reducing that to 10 and to a point where we get to our ultimate goal of a day or so in terms of registering people. Another target that we set under registration is the renewal process. This is to make sure that on a daily basis we're able to verify security businesses and officers. So the renewal, you will see as we go along, the renewal process will be deteriorating in terms of the target, because we are now mature in terms of having to ensure every individual that is currently actively employed is in a position of a new certificate over and above the business registered are renewed accordingly. So when we now enter into the second phase of our registration process, which will be more online, this target will now be beefed up with a new strategic approach. The next slide just gives you an overview in terms of how we anticipate achieving both the individual registration training, we have two KPIs that we have highlighted there. The first one is the capacity building, and the second one is the one that is aligned in terms of like trying to make sure how do we now get to a point where we can be able to understand how many training providers are ready to implement the new changes that we're introducing in as far as professionalizing the industry's consumers, especially around the skills program. As you might be aware that most of our training providers are still dominating in the grade space. So it's so important that we prepare them for the conversion. Hence the capacity building process is so critical towards making sure that the conversion doesn't put the industry at halt and create a shock to a point where people feel like if it's that business, they have to shut down business. However, through capacity building, we prepare them for the transition and they're able to get the systems that are required to compete effectively within the private security industry. Over and above that, as a regulator, we need to get a clear picture of how many people are ready for the transition. Hence, this other indicator sort of helps us to give us that clear view in terms of how far are we in terms of the current registered security training providers, how many are ready to do the conversion as far as the NQF aligned training is concerned. And then in the next slide, we've just articulated in terms of how we're going to be measuring both indicators quarterly to measure the effectiveness and come up with any mitigating factors that might help us to be effective and efficient in this regard. The next slide talks about our fourth sub-program, which is research and development. This, as the director earlier mentioned, that research and development support the three key pillars of core business, which is training, industry training, registration, and law enforcement. So through research conducted, we're able to understand what policy decisions, policy documents that must be introduced in order to enable us to come up with regulations that will help us to effectively execute our mandate as a regulator. So we have identified four key performance indicators. One is the number of completed research per year. The research topic, we've identified two research topics, another one is on the service that we want to conduct, because it's so important to constantly have a clear picture of what are the perceptions out there. We can't just be conducting awareness and we don't measure ourselves in terms of our awareness. Does it really achieve the set goals and targets that we want to achieve as an organization? Hence the surveys sort of give us that idea of what is happening in the environment that we operate within. And then we've also set a target of, for this current, the new financial year, two policies that we want to definitely produce. And the number of partnerships that we want to establish with institutions of higher learning, because that also brings credibility to our work. We've set a target of at least the minimum of one, but that doesn't say if an opportunity arises, we won't expand our wings and establish more partnerships. So in the next slide, we've just articulated in terms of how we will go about fulfilling this set four targets under research and realizing the set key performance indicators throughout the financial year. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll just take you through the budget allocation and the process that we have embarked on. The first slide of the budget is where we indicate that the aim of this budget allocation is to ensure that all planned performance targets are funded and we are able to support the mandate and also to contribute to the outcome 12 and service delivery goals of the authority. The next slide, that's where we indicate our revenue trends and also the MTF allocation. projected allocation of our revenue. And then I'll just go to the last one, where we, the current one, 2016-17 until 1920, we have seen a growth of, we anticipating a growth of 4%. The growth is merely because of the increase in security business, security officers, and also the admin and annual administrative fees. So it's a, it's not a drastic, it's a flat one in terms of the way we are conducting our business. And then also because we are not allowed, we are not allowed to budget for a deficit or surplus. We, our expenditure also increased by 4%. And then maybe one challenge that I just want to highlight, the alignment of MTF and also the timing where we do our admin and annual fees. So the one before comes before the other, and then sometimes the negotiations doesn't go the same way as we plan. So, but we normally implement cost containment measures and realigning of our activities to ensure we stay in line. And then I'll move to the next slide. Then the next slide, you'll see now we highlighting which items are our main revenue drivers. You see we have annual fees, we have registration fees, cost reports, sale of goods and other income. And other income is administrative fees where we do our monitoring of security business before. It's a lot of activities that go under the other. So the administrative fees constitute most of the other income. And then the next slide, it's I've already indicated the revenue increased by 4%. And then the next slide, it's also the budget per program. You can see that it is tallying with that, with the budget, and we're still increasing by 4%. But what I want to highlight is the main cost driver of our expenditure is employee cost, because we are the service-driven organization. However, we want to change the formula over time so that we can now start doing the footprint, so we limit other administrative costs. And the next slide is budget per program. We're now having a program one. If you look at program one, we have identified cost containment measures. You can see there's a lot of decreases under travel and administration, travel and subsistence. We also have consultancy fees that is being reduced, and also other operating expenses that we identified as cost containment measure. And then we have a key for the cost containment measure, and then we will allocate it to other pressing items. In the next slide, under program two, this program we should aim to capacitate it to, because it's our core business, so that we can, if I want to, I can make an example, traveling will reduce once we have a lot of capacity next to the our stakeholders. And then program three, we also allocated funds from there. The program three is, if you remember, the deputy director communicated, indicated that they are doing the public awareness advertising so that people know who we are. And if you look at over time, people will be knowing who we are, and that we are able, we will now be able, because they are the ones that is selling us, for the revenue to be collected, they are the ones that is talking about us and making sure that people comply. And then law enforcement enforce for people to come on board and pay what is due to us. And the next slide is for a capital project, capital items. We budgeting for computer equipment. We should refresh our computer equipment in terms of the grab after the, if you look at the lifespan, most of them, we've assessed them, they've reached their lifespan so that people can be efficient. And then also our software, the ERP system will be coming on board this financial year. And then the office equipment is a continuous one where we capacitate people on the need that they want. The office furniture, we know that we are busy with our new offices, so we're buying furniture for that. Leasehold improvement, we budget for partitioning and making use of the spaces in the offices as and when the official increase, number of employee increase. So it's one of the things that we have budgeted for. I think that's all.
Thank you very much. That is the presentation then by Sira. Members, we will now go to question comments with regard to the matter. Let's go to Honorable Malabatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is, what happens in an event a security guard is killed in the line of duty? My next one is, your security companies have increased, and have you, what about your investigators? Have they increased to be able to enforce compliance? Have you secured office accommodation for the Bloemfontein office and not the temporary one? Are your inspectors still using their own vehicles when doing inspections? And do you still receive vehicle allowance? Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bele.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think Honorable Mulabatsi partly stole two of my questions, but I'm coming at them from a slightly different angle. The first one was in terms of the issue she mentioned of the killing of security officers on duty. I'm not sure if she's thinking of the same article I read, but there was a story about an incident in Greytown on Monday evening in northern KZN, where a security officer was shot dead near an ATM. And my question in that regard is specifically after such an incident, does CIRA conduct any investigation to check whether there were any non-compliance problems that would have increased the vulnerability of an officer or officers after such an incident? My second question, also springboarding from the same issue around on slide 8, where it mentions there was an increase in the number of officers employed, approximately 10,000 was the increase in employed individuals in the past financial year. My question is whether in serious analysis you've picked up any significant trends in those growth figures, with a particular geographical dimension to it, so the particular regions. I remember at a meeting last year it was mentioned that 40% of all security officers and firms are in Gauteng, for example. So are we seeing a further expansion within that kind of localized area? Mm-hmm. Or are there any demographic features to that? So are we seeing, for example, younger people, more women coming into the sector? Just a picture of what that might look like. And then my third question, and I'll stop there for this round, is that there's only one mention of the private security industry in connection to crime prevention and reduction in the white paper on safety and security. And even then, it's only with reference to the 2012 National Security Strategy. So I was just wondering if has CIRA given any inputs or been given the opportunity and invitation to inputs into the white paper on safety and security when that process was being driven by the Civilian Secretariat, because it would seem to be a bit of an oversight on the parts of the Secretariat if the private security dimension was not brought into that picture. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Yilgaz.
Thanks, Chairman. that I'd like to address to the delegation. First, it's something that came up last year, and actually the year before, towards the end of 2015, that we as a committee raised, and I specifically spoke to, and that is the steps taken by the agency or the authority in terms of the involvement of private security in crowd control activities. Specifically at the time, it was related to the FISMA 4 movement and universities' use of it. What steps have you taken, perhaps in the form of a proposal from my side, in the form of a research and a policy document that your unit can look into? And then the vetting of the Deputy Director of Law Enforcement, I think this is one of the most critical components of the authority. Who is doing the vetting, and how long has it been outstanding? Because it's, you have made the offer, but there's the question mark around the vetting of the person. So I'm assuming, or you will indicate to me who does, but I'm assuming it's crime intelligence within the police. And then my last question for this round, you indicate that you had engagement with the presidency around the CERA Act Amendment Bill, and that you particularly furnished his office with reasons for parts of the bill that are causing reason for delay. When was this meeting held? Could I also request what your indication to the presidency was as to what the reasons are for which parts of the bill, and what the sense was coming out of the meeting? I know you are awaiting communication from the presidency about the way forward or a response to this, but what the sense is about the future of the bill and of the process going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Amri Lais, Honourable Wood. I'm sorry, Honourable Wood, just your microphone may be closer that we can. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry. In slide 50, will you please explain the decreased value of assets, e.g. office equipment, office furniture? Now, my second question, are all vacant posts filled? If not, when are you going to fill them? My third question, please indicate whether the memorandum of understanding with the SARS has been finalized, and whether the SARS is adhering to the provisions of the MOU. My fourth question is, please indicate whether any progress has been made to extend the geographic footprint of Sierra countrywide, especially in Northwest Free State and Northern Cape Province. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Mula. Honorable Ramatakani.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. While I follow my colleagues in the... Thank you, Sierra. I think there's a lot of progress that is noticeable. So I think that I can just say that Professor and the Council, I think, keep up the good job and oversight. The few questions I have, particularly Program 2. I noticed that you do plan, you have targets, but the targets are written in a strange way that we may not necessarily be able to know exactly what you have achieved. If you say you want to increase your target, and this is 90, last year we achieved 91, now you go to, you say there's 93%. And on the column that you, ordinarily you'll have your baseline target. Then you have a percentage, the unknown percentage for now. You say percentage, but then you target it for 90% of the percentage which has no baseline. How do we know
competitor of what? Number two, you will see you have an interchangeability of numbers and percentage. Some you would speak about numbers, you would write the numbers. You would know you had 1,500, and then you would say, from that, this is the percentage. So we are able to see, measuring in terms of quarterly, that they are able to achieve so much and so much in this quarter. So the difficulty I have is that when you have numbers and percentage, and the percentage of undisclosed number for now, maybe there is a number somewhere, how are we going to be able to hold you accountable to a number or percentage of a number that we don't know? So that's, and I mean, a general question like that in terms of your target and the measurability and the oversight that we need to be able to express on your targets, whether you're achieving or not. And if you look at the criminal cases target, you will say 93%, and you haven't actually said, why don't you use your previous year baseline numbers? And of course, from working out of your baseline number of the previous year, you can then factor your increase of those numbers on your baseline, and then of course then talk about percentage. I'm just asking that question because I think at the end, when you have to appear before us and you say, well, we have achieved 90% of 90%, which we did not even know what it is, that's the question really. And on the financial side and administration, I also see that you are self-funding body, and therefore when you target in terms of your planning, your recovery, revenue recovery, why do you plan not to recover 100% and you plan to recover less than 100% if you're a self-funding organization? Is it linked to what, capacity and non-capacity, or what is it linked to? Just trying to understand that. Thirdly, Chair, you do say that you are going to reduce some of the costs in terms of administration and finance, the subsistence, traveling, and so on. But how do you reconcile that with the fact that somewhere in the very plan you say that you're not going to employ more inspectors in terms of your provincial footprint, and that may necessitate traveling and subsistence, basically, that in terms of those who travel. So I'm just not understanding, if you're not employing more inspectors in various provinces, but you're going to be able to cut down the expense of traveling, you may have a good inspector in another province or based in the Gauteng that you want that person to go particular investigation. He or she must be involved in another province. How are you going to get that person there if you have your plan to reduce it? I'm just asking the question. It may well be not well informed question. You know the reason. The reports, writing of reports and filing of the reports, is a spot check with by the inspectors to see what the kind of quality. And while I'm on that issue, I just wanted to find out in terms of the report skills, capacity you have in respect of writing the skills report inspectors, the closing down of those reports. Now, asking this particular question. I mean, the other question has already been asked about safety aspect. So, thank you, Chair. I mean, I could have gone line by line, but I think it's not going to be helpful. I just want to understand the method of planning in terms of your target, because I think that's where we need to be able to hold you accountable around the target and achieving and non-achieving of target. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Shlongo.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Sorry for my bit late. Chairperson, I think I'll have only two questions. One will be on slide 38, where you talk of finalization of two policies. The two policies that you have finalized, maybe you can clarify us, well, what are those policies? So that maybe one will have a bit of an understanding. The other one is a general question. Noting that this is a self-sustaining organization, Chairperson, I think it would be wise to get a glimpse understanding as to how much of the local application or interest shown by the local people to the industry. I'm raising this Chairperson because I may be worried about the level of capital flight, even only if in such a critical sphere we have mostly the powerful foreign people who apply or who get introduced to the industry. And they're also looking into the critical service that they render. I don't really think it would be a wise question to actually then expose ourselves or open much of ourselves to the foreign bodies in this particular area. Thank you.
Thank you very much. A couple of questions from my side. Maybe the one issue, the decrease in tariff income, I just want to know from a going concern point of view, is the board and the director confident that these differences will not lead to a going concern problem? I just want to get a sense, because especially you've got now a new tariff structure for in place. I just want to get an indication of that, what is the exact situation then. I think Honourable Yelenay has referred to the issue of the bill. Now, I think we welcome the fact that you have included the indicator for regulations, but it will be regulations in terms of the 2001 Act. And I mean, the idea would be 16 years down the line, this new environment, so we need actually a new bill in place. So if we can just get an indication, the idea of going ahead with the regulations in terms of the 2001 Act, is that still on the cards? If we can just get an indication with regard to that. Then there is also an increase in membership registration. I just want to get an indication, what is the reason, what is your analysis of the sector? And then the big elephant in the room, what is the percentage of firms of the big five or four or six that's still that's foreign owned? Can we just get an indication of that? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will deal with the first tranche of questions and then also offer my colleagues an opportunity to deal with some of the questions. I think the first question from Honorable Mlebatsi was what happens in an event a guard is killed on duty, and I think linked to that question is, do we conduct investigations when guards are killed, especially where there are allegations of perhaps lack of capacity for the guard to do his work. Chairperson, when a guard is killed on duty, normally the process is that they would issues of negligence on the side of the employer that led to actually less capacity or less training, or perhaps the guard himself was not trained to be in a particular situation. Then we will conduct research. The challenge we have currently is that there isn't reporting, as we spoke about it in our last sitting before the House, that is compulsory reporting for them to report those fatalities to us, which is something that we're looking into, Chairperson. You would recall that the questions that we were responding to earlier on is looking into how do we strengthen that area. And that area is also going to be strengthened by the current bill that we are waiting for. In fact, in the bill, it's quite very clear that that reporting becomes quite compulsory. So we will be investigating those matters as and when they are reported to us. And some of them, we pick them up on the media, and then we are able to then initiate our investigations as and when we have them. Chairperson, the matter of the office in Bloemfontein, we were quite very excited, Chairperson. You would recall that we went on a second round of trying to procure offices in Bloemfontein. The first round, it was not successful. There was almost a no-show. The second round there was about, I think, three that responded to the bid. We went ahead and evaluated right in the end when we were supposed to award. In fact, technically the award was done internally, but the letter wasn't given to the supplier because then we still have to verify all other issues of compliance before the award is done. We then discovered that the person that we were supposed to award to is not tax compliant. Obviously, we are obliged to ensure that everyone that we give is compliant with the tax, so we require the person to get the tax matters in order before we can issue a letter or whatever, you know, the letter of appointment. So there was quite a period that took place. By the time the person fixed his tax issues, then he informs us that he is actually disposed of the building. And then he offered another building to us, which is quite unacceptable, because if you look at the specification in the first place, it wouldn't be necessary. So that called on us to actually start the process afresh, unfortunately. But what we've done this time, because of the challenges of the response to the lease, we've revised the terms of reference in such a way that in the first place we were targeting a particular number of square meters. We were targeting 1,000. What we've done now, we've broken it into two. We were targeting 500 so that we are able to get a much more bigger pool of response if you're targeting a space of 500 square meters. And then we've taken the rest of the other square meters in the Northern Cape. You would recall that initially Bloemfontein was supposed to cater both Northern Cape as well as Free State. Now, what we've done is we've looked at other areas which are quite economically vibrant in the Northern Cape, Kuruman being one of them. There's an area called Katu. You notice that there's mining activity there. There's a lot of demand for security, even security officers in that area. So the smaller office out of those square meters will be taken to that area to ensure that there's much more better service delivery in that area. So we are issuing another invite to service providers to bid for offices in that line. The other question, are our inspectors still using their own vehicles? Yes, they are still using their own vehicles. They have car allowance. From time to time, we do review the car allowance to ensure that we're still adequately in the market. But I must say that we haven't reviewed it in quite some time. We are going to be doing that review as well as what they need to be reimbursed in terms of petrol allowances and so on, in line with what Treasury has published. Chairperson, I will just give my colleagues an opportunity to deal with other questions, and then we will. Thank you. Just ask Stefan to deal with the questions that relates to the targeting, the targets and so on. I think the questions regarding to the killing of a guard, I've already technically dealt with that question. The one in greater, an increase in overs in other areas, the issue of demographics.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just to add on what the director said in terms of injuries and fatalities on duties. This kind of information is reported to the Workman Compensation Commissioner. We've been liaising with that office as well, and they've actually given us some statistics for the injuries and fatalities in security industry during during the last financial year, they've indicated that there was 5,705 injuries reported by security businesses and 14 fatalities. Besides this information that we are collating from the Compensation Commission, as the director has pointed out, it's not compulsory for the industry to report it to us, but we are looking at an amendment in terms of the reporting of information to CIRA, where this must be duplicated and reported to CIRA as well. I've had discussions with the Compensation Commissioner's office on this as well, and they indicated they would also appreciate if we collate this kind of information as well, so we can draw comparisons in terms of reporting and whether the business are complying in their reporting. We also obtain information from the private security sector Provident Fund in terms of any death claims as well as disability claims, but this is obviously a little bit different from injuries on duty, as all claims in terms of death or disability is reported to the, is provided for in terms of private security sector problem, but not necessarily whether it's on duty or off duty.
Sorry, this is just a follow up on that issue from Honorable Mulabachi.
Thank you, Chairperson. With SAPS, if a member is killed on duty, there is an amount that is paid to the beneficiary. Are you considering such a thing? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mulabachi.
Thank you, Chair. As I mentioned, there is actually a private security sector provident fund provided for in terms of legislation, which is a statutory compulsory fund that security businesses and security officers must be members of. And this fund does provide for death and disability cover for security officers that's injured or killed on duty. So it is already provided for in labor legislation. In terms of the increase of the inspectors, Chairperson, what we try to achieve from CIRA at this stage is to have a ratio of one inspector for every 120 businesses, and we monitor that continuously. I'm glad to report that we've recently, within this month, appointed 8 additional inspectors. Our component at this stage is 68 inspectors nationally. We intend to appoint another 5 inspectors in the second quarter of this financial year. So hopefully in July, August, to increase that number then to 73, and then an additional 5 inspectors are earmarked for appointment in the next financial year and budgeted for. So we're continuously monitoring the situation in terms of the ratios of inspectors versus businesses, and then we try and provide budget to increase those inspectors. In terms of I believe the director has already spoke about the issue of investigation of injuries. What I can maybe just add there is that when we learn about any injuries or fatalities in the industry, we do want to verify whether the businesses were complying, whether the security officers that in fact were injured, whether they were adequately registered to CIRA, whether they were adequately trained for the particular security service they are rendering, and that's the kind of investigations we do conduct. And if it's found that a security officer were, for argument's sake, not particularly trained for the security service, then we'll take action against the person in terms of our code of conduct. The steps taken by private security industry in crowd control, thank you, Chair. I think we gave our position quite clear to this committee that security industry is not supposed to be involved in actual crowd control and management. That is a function exclusively to South African Police Service and the Public Order Police in general. We've liaised with the industry on this. We've had discussions with the industry. We've also had a number of discussions with the South African Police Service on this matter, and especially the head of the Public Order Policing. We've actually developed a draft directive to the industry in conjunction with the South African Police Service that sets out the role of the private security industry in the environment where there needs to be crowd management. I think, in this regard, we specifically talk like in an environment of riot control or where there's discourse by any striking individuals or demonstrating individuals, and to define the role of the private security industry and that of the South African Police Service. We We've also agreed with the South African Police Service that they will be developing standard operating procedure in their interaction with the private security industry once they're at the scene, and their expectations then obviously from the private security industry. I think it's generally accepted that we can't wish the security industry away in an environment where there's protest. They are there to fulfill a contractual obligation towards their client in protecting and safeguarding property and persons of the client. But their role must be restricted to that function and not to actively be involved in dealing and dispersing crowds. That is not their function, and that's how we've developed our directive as well. The issue of the vetting of the DD law enforcement, I'm not sure if I need to deal with it, but that's going to deal with that.
Thank you, Chairperson. If I were to go back to the other question that was asked by the Honourable Mbele regarding the increase in the number of security officers and what other geographical areas are we looking into, and whether there is a, what is the appetite of young people who are getting into the industry given the increase. Chairperson, at this stage, let me say that there is quite a shift in terms of the generation that is getting into this industry. We can pick up also from a social media point of view what kind of security officers are we dealing with. They are getting younger and younger. The old guard is getting out. So there's definitely a lot of young people that are coming into the industry by way of a generational shift. We haven't done the numbers in terms of how many of these young people. We do have the data, but we haven't done those numbers, so I wouldn't want to give an exact number at the moment. But there is definitely an increase. We see more and more of them coming into the industry, Chairperson. I think the other question was whether we've had any input on the white paper on safety and security. Chairperson, there was a process previously with the civilian secretariat, and I'm not mentioning the current civilian secretariat. The previous one was, I think, Ms. Jenny Irish-Koshiani. There was a process that was embarked extensively where we were actually making inputs. We've made very extensive inputs, not only in the area that has been mentioned. I'm not quite sure whether all of that have been taken into account and what is the process of finalizing the document, but we've made very extensive inputs. That covers the entire industry at the time. With regard to those chips. Just also to correct, there was a comment that was made, we complimented us in terms of registering the professional body. I think the date that we have committed to now on the presentation is the date of the publication of the notice itself, not the finalization of the application. I just wanted to correct that for purposes. On the vetting of the DD law enforcement, Chairperson, we make a distinction between the vetting and security clearance. In this case, the vetting is a process which we then take internally, which entails the verification of qualifications, verification of the CV, any other issues and so on, including issues of the competency assessments and so on. So that is the process that is undertaken. Normally, you'd find that if there were two candidates that made up to the list, both candidates would have to go for assessments, not necessarily that all of them would be vetted. Then there's a separate process of security clearance, which is done by SSA, South African State Security Agency. The amendment to the Amendment Act, Chairperson, what specifically were the issues there? Chairperson, I think the meeting, as it was reported to me by my colleagues, was just to get to understand that there is certain objections that have been made in the presentation that were made by certain interest bodies within the industry and in the country itself regarding those critical areas of our amendment itself. So the engagements were sort of how then do we beef up areas of concern. How then do we justify those areas which are not quite very clear from the legal opinions and the representations that were made before? So that process was agreed. are registering as a professional body, we need to be developing standards. So we need to fill the capacity to be much more stronger on the training side and have adequately trained people to deal with training issues, to set standards and so on. And so, so the OD exercise, which the council has already approved, will be looking into those areas, so which might also then determine that there's additional positions that we might add, and so on and so on. Chairperson, I'm just trying to see what's the question with regard to funding and the recovery. I think my colleague CFO will deal with that. Just come.
Thank you. There was a question about why is the office furniture decreasing? So office furniture is a fixed cost, and over time it should remain or it must be eliminated, because once you bought the furniture, it must stay for a certain period, and then after the prescribed period, you can revaluate and keep it in the organization. That's why there would not be a constant purchasing of office furniture. The next one is, why are we planning to recover less if you are a self-funded organization? If I have to, because we fund our operations with the collection. Am I allowed to make an example? If I bill the security industry 100 rand, and then I budget 100 rand, and then the economic climate change, junk status and everything, and exiting of security, I'm going to be unable to fund my operation, because I would not recover, collect, to be able to fund my operation. So before we bill as prescribed, but when we budget for those looking at the situation of the economy and the trend of, because other security companies, they register only for tenders, and then after the tendering process is awarded, if they didn't get it, they fall off the system. So those are some of the things that we look at, because if you are a self-funded, you should make sure that you are certain to collect, to fund operations. And also in terms of National Treasury guidelines, we have a 10% variance of debtors collection. So you have that 10% that you can classify it as a provision of bad debts and unrecoverable debts, because the economic climate changes every time and you can't force people to pay you. We have people default everywhere. So that's what the analysis that we use to determine the collection rate. And then also on the issue of how we, I'll give the general explanation of how we do our targeting. We use the previous year targets, and then we look at the target differ in terms of a percentage, and the other one differ in terms of the numbers. So we look at how good we have done, and then if we were under if we say percentage increase, we look at the baseline of the last financial year. So if you look at our technical description, you see that we take the last year achievement and then we increase it from there. And then the other one, in terms of the going concern, I don't think we'll have a problem in terms of the going concern, because our annual and administrative costs have been accepted in average of 6% across. And then I think that's all from me. I don't know if there's something.
Thank you, Chairperson. I might have missed a question regarding the MOU with SAPS and how far we are. But that MOU has been signed and currently operational. There's been working groups between us and SAPS, and I think part of the success that we're seeing in the prosecution side and dealing with the criminal cases is the outcome of the implementation of the MOU. Chairperson, the question regarding the regulations that we're currently drafting or planning to draft versus what the bill says, and why we then looking at 2001 Act
as opposed to the new bill. Chairperson, you will recall that the amendment actually did not fundamentally change the main principles in the current Act. The reason why we are focusing on the current Act currently, it is because the current regulations are quite outdated, Chairperson. We have adopted the strategy where we're preparing for the implementation of the new Act, which looks at the industry in a segmented way. So our focus in research is directed at in researching in the individual sectors of the industry. Therefore, after the research, we then develop policy that we're able then to do specific regulations for specific sectors of the industry. So that process will be ongoing. By the time the new Act is promulgated, we will then be a little bit a step ahead in terms of preparing for that environment. So that is the reason why we are going in that direction. There was also
So it's dependent, of course, on the adoption or the implementation of the new bill, the new Act. Yeah.
Not entirely, Chairperson. The areas that we're focusing on right now are areas that have been catered for by the kind of general regulations that we have. So we're seeking, I will just give an example. In the area of the use of animals, for instance, we've had regulations. Those regulations are outdated. Now we are refining those regulations. We've done research to sort of gather the current environment and so many other areas. So we do not have necessarily to wait. Those areas where perhaps were not covered by the current Act, of course we can't do regulations if the new Act is not yet in place. The finalization of policies in which...
Sorry, Director. Honourable Robert Kani, follow up.
On the previous answer that has been given on the collection part, I wasn't very clear about the... I want to make a follow-up in this way. Your source of income come from registration, come from fines that you imposed. What else? Now, the question I was asking, you saying you're planning in this financial year to collect that revenue, less revenue, from what you're entitled to. So the question I was asking, why are you planning, if you are self-funded, why are you planning to collect less what you're entitled to? The answer is, we look at the economic situation, and based on the economic situation, then we get to the target. Now, I'm not sure whether we're talking rand-dollar exchange, which has an impact, basically, in terms of... But if we're talking rand and rand, for what you're entitled to, for those that are registering, unless you're saying some there are waivers, we're giving waivers in terms of registration because the economic climate is unaffordability of this and that, therefore this is going to give us this. But I'm not sure whether I'm convinced with the answer of less collection on what is due to you. And I ask the question, what informed that less collection? Is it a capacity to collect? Your own capacity to collect? Or what is it? I still don't know whether you have given me the quiet answer about it. Because the question is money. It's the money that must come to you. Who are going to be so lucky to be taken out of the payment in this particular year, this percentage that we're leaving on this side? Then they will be maybe the bill will come to them the next year. We don't know the next year because your spreadsheet of collection
100%. So there is going to be escape, and escape, and escape, and escape. And who is going to be escaping on payment? That's really the question. Is there any other way that method you can introduce that can help you to collect what you is due to you in order to address your cash management and cash flow problem? That's really the question I was asking.
I also saw a hand of Honorable Mula for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is a follow-up on the MOU. When was it signed? And what is in the content of the MOU? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. That's the follow-up, Director. You can go ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me try to address the question of the collection again, and my colleague here will just substantiate if it is not more clear. Chairperson, what we're saying here is that we budget for a particular amount. Obviously, what we budget for, ordinarily, we always aim to collect 100%. Now, there's a difference between the budgeting and the billing. So what we do is we will obviously bill what we've budgeted for. Now, from an accounting point of view and from a treasury point of view, you're allowed to have a variance of the bad debt. You have to make provision for bad debt. Given the outlook, what is the likelihood of the percentage of people not paying and how many of those people? So then, instead of saying that if I have billed 100 rand, I will collect the entire 100, because there's a possibility that you may not collect the 100 rand. So then it means that you will always fail to achieve your target. Now, you need to have that provision for bad debt. But even the provision, given the provision for bad debt, doesn't mean that you are now not collecting what is due to you. Obviously, that 10% that you have made provision for, you will still go and try to go and collect by other means than the normal means. I think that's what we're trying to say. We're not trying to say that we are budgeting ordinarily not to collect a certain percentage of the revenue that is due to us. I think if that is maybe clear.
Page 21 on the administration. You put a target here of 80% collection. My question is based on that. Now, the bad debt issue doesn't come into the equation of what you are planning to achieve. Because in the 80%, you can still have a bad debt. Even in the 60%, you can still have a bad debt. The question is the planning, your own foundational planning to what to achieve what, to collect what is due to you. In the 20% that you are planning to collect, who is the 20% that you are not going to collect, and why? So that's really the question. So I understand the explanation about what happened in the middle of the road, as you were walking. But the planning is not the question I was asking. You depend on what you collect, right? So if you depend on what you collect, the question I'm asking, why do you plan to collect less to what is due to you? Based on your plan, collecting of revenue collected. That's really the question. Maybe I can leave it if you don't have an answer right now to rethink about it. Rethink about it, whether it's a correct way of planning to achieve less when you're supposed to achieve 100%.
Chairperson, I think maybe we'll find a different way of explaining it. But I think the planning itself, it's taking into account all those pitfalls that you might have in the future. Hence, it remains 80%. I don't know how the best to explain it, but you will never find a situation where you would say, I plan to collect 100% and you put a head there. That would be a very difficult situation. Of course,
entire collection environment depend solely on this trend that we have, perhaps that's when we can say, look, if we know that so and such companies with the money that we want to collect, and we are able to determine that upfront, we would say 100% we are going to collect that money. But I think I understand the question, but that's how, unfortunately, the environment is. Chairperson, let me just continue with the rest of the other questions that we haven't answered. Just to make sure, there was a question in terms of the quality of writing reports. I'm not sure if my colleague has dealt with it.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe just to on the follow-up question, when was the MOU or the memorandum agreement signed? It was signed during, I believe it was April last year, Chairperson. Now, the agreement makes provision for the establishment of a national consultative forum between CIRA and the South African Police Service, and then the South African Police Service then represented by the different disciplines, whether it's detectives, visible policing, firearm registrar's office, etc., etc. And that forum has actually met a few times. We had a national workshop as well in October last year, and we are developing our strategy. It's an ongoing process. I must add, although we've got very good cooperation from the office that's overseeing the running of the National Consultative Forum, we do still have a bit of challenges of everyone coming on board or from a national perspective. But we are liaising with the South African Police Service. A meeting is scheduled for the first quarter in this year to pave the way forward and develop our plan. So, we are definitely going in the right direction. There's always room for improvement, but I can really compliment the initiative from ourselves, from the South African Police Service especially, to participate in this memorandum of agreement. In terms of the question that was raised on the targets for the law enforcement department, and specifically the reference to the different targets, and what some are numbers and some are percentages. The percentages targets are the challenge that we're having. We can't put a numerical target for argument's sake on the number of prosecutions we're going to be doing this year, because we don't know how many businesses we're going to be finding that are non-compliant. So our target is based on a percentage. What we do is, we in our technical indicator description, we try to explain how we derive to the percentage. We're carrying, obviously, some cases over from the previous financial years into the new financial year. That will be our starting figure. But during every single month, we will then prosecute, or new cases will be submitted for prosecution. Now, that numerical number we can't say, because it's based on the inspections that the law enforcement department is doing, and then verifying whether it was compliant or non-compliant. So that figure is always different. So that's why we write back to a percentage that we are saying of the cases carried over from the previous year and the new cases that were submitted for prosecution, how many percentage of them have we finalized in a particular financial year. The numbers will be displayed in our annual report. It will indicate how did we get to the 93%. It will indicate the numerical number carried over, the numerical number of cases received, and how we got about the percentage. So that figures will be available, but only at the end of the financial year. For our role is obviously to monitor that. We want to ensure that 90% of the cases that we receive are prosecuted, and we obviously upping that target as we build capacity. In terms of the prosecution department, we've got prosecutors now in each of our regional offices, which we didn't have before. So we've built capacity in that area as well. And as I mentioned, the amendment to the improper conduct regulations during last year also increased our turnaround time for prosecutions, because it combined the charge sheet and the summons. So we don't serve two documents, we only serve one document. So the persons will receive the charge sheet and at the same time immediately know the date of set down for hearing if they choose not to plead guilty or choose not to respond to us. The same applies to the criminal case target, because we don't know in the beginning of the year how many cases we're going to open criminally against security service providers. That's a product of our investigation. And if we determine there's a criminal case, then or there's a need need for criminal case, then we will open that. But we will report the numerical figures again in our annual report to indicate how we derive at the percentage.
One of the questions that was raised was in terms of around the increase with within the registration numbers. Last year we had over 102,000 females registered within the private security industry. There has been a 6,000 increase. We're sitting at 108,000 female actively registered within the private security industry. Another province that is now emerging as one of the economic hubs within South Africa is Limpopo from a private security point of view. There was a time when it was sitting around number 6 or number 5. It's now sitting at number 4 after Western Cape. So Limpopo is embracing the private security industry from an employment point of view, over and above young people entering the industry. Another question that was posed was on the policies that the two focus policies that we will be undertaking. Currently we're busy with the transformation charter. That transformation charter must be followed by a clear policy position from a regulatory perspective in terms of how are we planning to articulate our plan in as far as transforming the industry as a whole is concerned. And another policy position is it will be on a segmentation of the industry, because when you look at the current 2001 Act, it's still perceived as a more blanket approach. So through a segmented regulatory framework, we're able to now get to a point where people will be registered as occupations that exist within the private security industry, not just a blanket registration. So those are the key focus going forward.
Thank you, Chairperson. Perhaps the last
director, there is two follow-ups, Honourable Bele, Honourable Rielingeis, and Honourable Lakhani on the responses.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick follow-up. Thank you for the clarity and the detail of those growth figures. I just want to check, so did I understand correctly that in terms of the 10,000-odd increase over the past year, 6,000 of that was new female officers? Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think the other question was relating to how many of the, given the increase, how many of the local people are showing interest in the private security industry. I think the substantial number of people that are registered on a daily basis are local citizens, Chairperson. The question linked to that was the percentage of companies that are foreign owned, Chairperson. We have always said it is quite very difficult for us to determine with certainty that number, given the fact that, first of all, we were not collecting the data in terms of the shareholdership of companies as opposed to the directors. So other companies will choose to disclose what the directors are running the company, which not necessarily say who are the owners. The owners are actually the shareholders. I think given the new amendment act, which will make it easy for us to start collecting the data and to build that going forward. So currently there's also a lot of changes that are taking among the big five. I think the question relating to that, you would notice that there is a transaction where Fidelity Group bought almost the entire armed reaction of ADT, which I think is a transaction that was widely reported as well. So there is a constant change that is taking place in terms of the ownership patterns, both affecting foreign owned as well as local owned. But I think Chairperson will find a way of trying to get to the actual changes that takes place from time to time in regard to that.
Thank you, Chair. Just on the question of the verification of inspection reports. All inspection reports are verified by a senior inspector that they report to in terms of our organizational structure. We've also, in January, appointed a manager of the compliance department as responsible also to verify the quality of the reports. What we also implemented is a peer verification as well. When an inspector goes to a business that's been inspected previously, that inspector needs to report on the previous findings of the report that was done by the previous inspector. And it's also captured in the his or her report to verify, you know, the findings of the previous inspector versus the findings of that particular inspector. We've also introduced, well, it's not newly introduced, but we also do rotate inspectors because we do know that sometimes inspectors may become familiar with certain businesses in their particular area. So we rotate the inspectors on an annual basis where the businesses in a particular area will now be subject to inspection by another business inspector in order to verify also, you know, there's no familiarity, but that's created, you know, between the law enforcement environment and the businesses that actually been being subjected to inspections.
Honorable Yeah,
Chairperson, a new question from my side. And it is perhaps an indictment on myself as a member of the committee, but to the Deputy Director of Communications. I often hear, or I have often heard, of allegations of private security companies, in particular in the area that I live, that allegedly raid of properties, that harass people, that do those kind of things. So what avenues are there open for a private citizen who has an issue with a private security company that is allegedly engaging in terrible conduct that clearly is beyond their mandate? Where, and is it possible to report it? Do I phone someone? Do I email someone? What do I do? Thank you.
Honourable Lakhani, follow up. We're still on follow ups, then we'll conclude that.
No, Chair, just a follow up on the program two in terms of the unknown percentage. So will it be correct to assume that if you have the percentage, unknown percentage there, and you want to achieve 77% or 83%, or that of the 100%, is that going to be of the 100% received? Is it? So what's the problem of writing the 100%?
Robert Lacani is persistent this morning.
No, I'm just asking.
Let's have the responses.
What we have done is to develop a complaints office policy with the intention of making sure that all our offices have properly set up complaint offices. So that will enable consumers of private security to directly lodge a complaint with us as a regulator, and as far as any misconduct is concerned in that aspect. And what we have further done in the process is to engage with the National Consumer Office in terms of complaints that are outside our mandate. How do we go about making sure that they're escalated to the office? Because we don't just want to say, sorry, we can't help you. They still have to know that there's an end result towards their challenges. So we can safely say at this very moment, the draft policy has been developed, which will see the properly setting up of offices, complaint offices within the various regions of SIRA, where people can walk in and lodge their complaint, or use other mediums like fax, telephone, and other platforms that we have identified as amicable in the policy.
Chairperson, yes, just to come back, the measurement is on the 100%, the ones that we carried over plus the total that we received. But if we look for the argument's sake in a legal process, if we investigate, because our calculation is based over the period April to March, if we argument's sake receive, you know, 50 cases in March for prosecution and it's been authorized, the prosecution commission cannot be finished within March. It needs to be carried over to April or May, simply because we need to give notice to the persons of the attended prosecution. So, you know, ideally it would be fantastic if we could say we could finalize that case within that month as well, but it's practically not possible. That's why it will then result in a carry over to the next financial year. The same with complaints received. We may receive complaints in the last week of a month that the inspectors are not going to get around to. It's only going to be investigated the following, you know, following month, which then falls within the next financial year. But we do report this, the case as received, and our calculation is in place within that, what was received within that financial year.
That's the responses. No, I think, colleagues, let's break 15 minutes, and we come back at a 11:15 for the second round and other responses. 11:15. Thank you.
Gracias.